ゴジラが近づいております。警備隊の指示に従って避難してください。
Live images here in the studio.
Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. I don't know what it is.
Welcome to Tokyo Lives, the Giant Monsters podcast special report. I'm Kyle.
I'm Coleman. And we are doing something a little different. If you've been listening to the podcast so far, you know that tonight's episode is going to be a little more off the cuff, a little more live, in the sense that I'm not going to edit this at all so that we can get it out as quickly as possible. Because tonight, we are reviewing the brand new film, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yep, literally just came out 2 hours ago for pretty much everybody. So this is as fresh on everybody's mind as possible.
we said from the very first episode of our podcast, no matter what this movie turns out to be, we are going to review it for the podcast. We're a giant monster podcast, and Cloverfield is very much a giant monster movie. So
yes,
it makes perfect sense to review the sequel.
Yes, in theory. That's all I'll say on that.
Just so you know, if you're worried about spoilers, that sort of thing, we're going to give our general thoughts of the movie, a little mini review, without giving away any spoilers at all. Like, we're going to be hardcore, no spoilers. And then we'll give a huge announcement during the episode. Hey, we're about to move into spoilers. And then we're going to jump right in. So just be aware of that.
Yeah, definitely. So if you are listening on your way to work or something, make sure to stop the podcast before, when you hear us say that we are getting into spoiler territory.
You need to pull over to the side of the road
and stop.
Turn the podcast off.
Absolutely.
Because there are some pretty big spoilers.
This movie's been so secretive that it's almost impossible to review it in a long format without talking about spoilers. Like, it's impossible. So,
and honestly, it wouldn't be a very honest review, I think, if I didn't get into spoilers.
No, yeah. There's a lot of things to get into, especially spoiler territory.
So but, I will say, just right off the bat, go see the movie. I don't think either of us are going to say that
no.
You can avoid it. Go see the movie, especially go in as cold as possible, because that literally might be the difference between you enjoying it or not.
Yeah, and I mean, it's getting rave reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. It's at like 91% certified now. So, I mean, it is getting good reviews. I'm not going out of my way to say don't go see it, but this is going to give you more of a general idea, especially if you listen to the spoiler section and you don't care. You'll get a general idea of what to expect instead of going into this and maybe getting screwed over to a certain extent. But once again, not going to go into that. So let's go ahead and get to our spoiler-free explanations of what we thought of the movie. I'll let you go ahead and start.
Okay, so I've been following this movie extremely closely for about 3 months, and with the title Cloverfield, I'm only following it for the last 3 months because that's literally when it was announced. If you've been following this at all, it was a big deal that this movie was announced very, very soon before it was about to come out. Very secretive production, all of that sort of thing. So I've been following it because I was such a fan of the original movie. Huge, huge Cloverfield fan. It came out of nowhere. Was this amazing giant monster movie, completely original, just loved every second of it. So I went into this movie knowing some things were going to be different, knowing the idea that it's not technically a Cloverfield sequel. I think that's been in the news quite a bit. I won't say anything more than that, but knowing that things might not be everything that I loved from the original. I have to say, though, I was still fairly disappointed with the film. I think the acting is on point. Great acting from the leads. I think it does a really good atmospheric tone, going for this kind of strange, keep you guessing, mystery story. Very suspenseful in parts. You really don't see some of the things coming in twists and turns. But I still just, I felt like it was almost like, the best way I can think to describe it, is that this was like the first draft of a script. Like somebody took an idea and they're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did this movie? And they wrote it out and didn't polish it at all, or or think of the consequences of their three-act structure. And I don't say that pretentiously, like some film students. I really mean, like, they wrote the story in two acts and then, you know, had a friend write the third one. it's very random. I enjoyed it the entire time. I wasn't not interested. I wanted to see where it was going. I wanted to see how crazy it got, but it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. And I have to say, as a huge, huge Cloverfield fan, really disappointed walking out of the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a confession. Of course, you already know this, but our viewers don't. I actually saw it earlier this morning. I was actually lucky to see it early. But I definitely walked out of this movie with disappointment in my mouth. The acting, like you said, very on point. John Goodman is fantastic. Like, he steals the show in this movie.
He does sorry to interrupt you. He did, like, this kind of, not accent, but, like, a different way of speaking.
Yeah.
And I thought it was good, because you know John Goodman's voice so much.
Yeah.
Like, you know him so well. It was cool that he did something.
He was
different.
He was able to put like a different inflection in his voice, is what I feel like it was. It wasn't even really an accent. It was just the way that he talked. He stuttered, you know, and he just had like this interesting way of speaking that really, really worked with his character, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, I mean, the acting in this movie was great. Like you were saying, the atmosphere, the tone was really good, especially at the very beginning, whenever she's, you know, not spoiler, but. You know, when she's first going where she's going, it really sets the tone really well for what this movie's going to be, or at least what you assume it's going to be at the beginning.
It kind of tells you right off the bat that this is going to be like a suspense mystery.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Even with the credits.
Right. Yeah. Just the way that it sets it up and the music sets it up really well as well. But exactly what it, like I pretty much agree with you on every single point. That doesn't lead to much good conversation, unfortunately, sometimes. But like I really feel like the movie and you know, when we get into the spoilers, we'll talk a little bit about how this movie came to be. And I feel like that is really evident in this film. Like the first two acts are very, very. Like different than the last. And it's just mind-boggling that it got that far without anybody pointing that out. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's like it's a first draft. It's like they took that first part, had their brother write the last part of the movie, and then just went with it. They didn't even like try and go back and like maybe do something else. They just was like, blah, here's the script.
Even better, connect the dots.
Yeah.
So that the third act made more sense.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's, you know, and as a Cloverfield fan of the first one, like, you know, it is kind of my own fault. I mean, I wasn't expecting a sequel, but I was expecting something a little bit more related.
I'll even go as far as to say, as a fan of the viral marketing campaign for this film,
yeah,
I was disappointed.
Yeah, I absolutely do not feel like this this ARG tied into this film as much as the original Cloverfields did. The ARG after seeing this film does feel just kind of tacked on. It gives a little bit more information, but some of it is actually extremely misleading once you see this finished film.
Yeah,
and you know, we'll get into that with the spoilers, but. No, I mean, you know, it's a solid, probably as an overall film. I don't like giving numbers, you know, to things, but it's like a, honestly, like a 6.5 out of 10, maybe 7 out of 10 for me.
I don't like giving numbers and then you like go into decimals.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 0.5. No, but, you know, like it is a well-made movie. So I have to give it credit for that at least. But as a whole product, it just does not stand up for me. I don't think I'm ever going to go walk back and watch this again, probably. I just don't. There's not going to be any reason for me to. But that's just me.
Yeah, I might see it again just to, like, not while it's in theaters, but later on down the road, to see if I can remove myself from the whole Cloverfield aspect of it.
Right.
But, I have to say, yeah, I mean, this movie is shot extremely well. for Dan Trachtenberg's first feature
film. Oh, yeah. This guy is going to go places. He's going to go places.
Really unique shots. I loved his jump in between wide and really tight shots. He does that. I think that's an annoying trend in modern filmmaking, and he does it really cool. His wide shots are full of stuff, and they're great to look at, and he jumps in between them well. It's not shocking like it usually is. And
well, he was very well, the way he filmed it was that whole I don't know if you've ever heard the term pulling back the rubber band and letting it snap.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, he was really good at that, which is very evident in how this movie builds its tension. You know, that was that he did that really well with how he did his shots, and very few directors out there actually get how to do those, like you were saying, the wide to really close. That is that whole pulling the rubber band and letting it snap, going close, letting it pull it back. You know, it's it was very impressive, especially for his first major, actually full-length feature film.
Yeah, and I also want to point out Bear McCreary with the score.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That was an amazing score.
Oh yeah, it had a really good good overall score. You know, it like there wasn't really, I wouldn't say there's a standout song that I was just like, oh, that's really cool. But it was one of those scores that just like throughout the entire film, it's just like, oh, this is really like helping push the movie along.
Yeah, and it's just very like, I would listen to it while writing or reading a book or something.
It's definitely
wanting to do something mysterious. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely more one of those in the background musical scores, though. It's not really like a, you know, like a, it's not a John Williams or.
Yeah, it's not in your face.
Or no, it's no Cloverfield, you know, roar at all. Anyway,
so, I mean, yeah, again, go out and see the movie. I would even say see it in theaters. It might hurt it a little bit not seeing it in theaters.
Yeah.
If that's your first experience with it, I would recommend seeing it. I would just be like, set your expectations really low, especially if you're expecting anything at all like the original Cloverfield film.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'm talking tone, I'm talking genre, anything.
Yeah.
It is nothing like the original film. And I don't want to just stress that I'm disappointed because it's not like the first film. I think on its own it has, I wouldn't even call them problems. I would just say, I don't know, like the filmmakers were excited about what they were doing and incredibly stubborn about it and didn't want to change anything.
Yeah, it's not necessarily it is problems, but it's one of those things where it's just there's enough speed bumps within the film that it ends up having problems as a whole. It's not like, you know, like that's...
Here's how I would describe it. Here's my best analogy I can think of right now. So 90% of the movie is written like a film. It plays on the big screen. It is very cinematic and film-esque. The end of the movie is like written like a 30-minute television episode. Like,
you're right.
It's like a TV ending stuck onto an actual film.
You're right. And you know, in the spoiler section, we'll get into more of why that actually is. I totally agree with you. Definitely go see it. I suggest going to go see it. It's not one of those movies that I'm like, oh no, like don't go see it. It doesn't deserve to make money. No, it does. Like we're saying, like
the especially acting in it is phenomenal. If it'll like, lead to anything else Cloverfield related, I want it to make money. I want it to do well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've even heard, like, it's way too early for these kind of talks, but like people are saying John Goodman is good enough in this film to like be nominated for an Oscar next year. Like he does turn in like a really great performance.
Yeah, I don't know about Oscar worthy.
No, I don't know about Oscar worthy either. Good
character acting.
Yeah, I don't know about Oscar worthy either, but like, you know, that's the fact that people are actually talking about that just shows that it is a really strongly acted film.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I definitely suggest to go see it. But yeah, temper your expectations down a little bit. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say spoiler free. Are you ready to get to the spoilers?
Yeah, I mean, we can jump into them. And again, these spoilers will be spoilers.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about everything. And probably the first words out of our mouth is going to be the biggest spoiler in the film. So
yeah, literally, I after the bump, you're going to hear one word and it's going to spoil the whole entire movie for you. So be very, very careful.
Yeah. So again, go see the movie, come back, listen to us, throw us a review on iTunes. If you like the fact that we were able to review a movie and have it out before 24 hours after the release, that's the kind of stuff we want to do on this podcast. So if you're a first time listener, I hope you're enjoying this. Check out some of our other episodes. And again, really appreciate any kind of reviews you guys could throw us, reviews or ratings, because I want this podcast to be strong. So we're going to get into the 10 Cloverfield Lane spoiler section right after this.
The monster will destroy us all.
Prehistoric monster.
The monster will destroy us all.
Monster.
The monster will destroy us all.
Prehistoric monster.
The monster.
This monster you'll see. You think your bombs will stop him?
So, you said one word will spoil this entire movie. Do you want to go ahead and say that word?
Aliens! It's aliens!
Independence Day somehow snuck into our Cloverfield.
Yes, somehow. Okay. So now that we're free from the non-spoiler leash that was on us, I have a lot to say about this movie as a freaking whole.
So let's break this down. I want to talk about the advertising, yeah, and J.J. Abrams first.
Right.
Then we should jump into why the script is in what shape it's in.
Yeah.
And then we should just be honest, as honest as possible.
Yeah.
So let's jump in that first. So the marketing for this film and J.J. Abrams. okay, you're gonna throw down. And we've talked about this in the last episode, but if this is your first episode with us and you've already seen the movie, this is our thoughts on this. If you're going to throw down the word Cloverfield, and you're not going to, I can hear the arguments already. You know, he came out, he said that it wasn't Cloverfield 2. You know, this is part of a new thing we're doing that's an anthology series.
It's a blood relative. A blood relative. Is the exact term he used.
Yeah, he never used the word anthology.
No, he used blood relative, which is the most obscure. Like, what the fuck does that mean? Sorry. Oh, by the way, there may be some expletives in this part. We do apologize, but this is a pretty passionate section of the podcast. I can tell you that much right now.
I'm just saying, okay, so blood relative, this is ridiculous. And this was, I can honestly say, now that I've seen the film, this was a complete for-profit bait and switch.
Absolutely.
They might have thought that they had a cool idea, or this is a new direction they could take the Cloverfield series, and they were truly excited about it. But it has nothing to do with Cloverfield at all.
Nothing. Zero.
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
There is a slusho sign in the gas station at the beginning of the movie, and that is the closest thing you will get to a Cloverfield reference. So it has the same amount of Cloverfield references as Star Trek and
Super 8. Yeah. And that's the biggest problem for me, is it's, you know, you look at the ending of this film, and I don't, you know, we're going to get to this later, but the fact is that, you know, a blood relative, to me, that says, like, okay, it's still going to be a monster movie, but it's going to be different. It's not going to be a direct sequel, which, you know, a direct sequel to Cloverfield 1 would have actually been a little weird, since it's been quite a while.
It
would have been a little strange to just pick up where Cloverfield 1 left off. Like, I feel like that would have been the wrong choice, but this wasn't the right choice either. This weird, like, hey guys, we're gonna call it Cloverfield, and everyone is going to get that thought in their mind that it's Cloverfield, and we're gonna try and keep saying that it is a blood relative over and over and over and over again, trying to get you to realize it's not a sequel. Well, guess what? Blood relative does not tell me that it's not going to have anything to do with it. Blood relative tells me that, oh, it's going to have something to do with it, but it's not going to be directly a sequel.
When you say blood relative, I think cousin.
Right. Yeah. I think the fact of, like, you know, Star Wars, what Star Wars is doing right now. And I wanted to bring this up because this is a perfect example of how you label something not a direct sequel. Star Wars Rogue One, the new Star Wars movie that's coming out this year, is labeled Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Like, as stupid as that title sounds, and there's better ways to word it, the fact is that no one is going into Rogue One later this year expecting to see, whoa, what's going on with Rey? What's going on with Luke Skywalker? No, because it's not called Star Wars Episode 8. It's called Rogue One, a Star Wars story. If he wanted to do this weird, like, multiple universes or whatever the heck is actually going on, he should have just called it Valencia, a Cloverfield story, or something similar.
But here's my biggest upfront. So you've got the marketing that no matter what your argument is against what we're about to say or what our argument is or why we're disappointed, you cannot change the fact that the marketing pushed the word Cloverfield and sometimes before the actual title of the film.
Yep.
They used the Twitter handle Cloverfield.
Yep.
They had a monster's roar, and not any monster, they had Clover's roar in the trailers.
Speaking of which, somebody said that roar was used in the film. I did not hear it once. Maybe it was hidden.
When the truck was being picked up, I feel like there was a little bit of a roar there.
But it wasn't the roar that was in the trailer,
clear thought, just trying to get out. You have these obvious pushes on the Cloverfield name and monsters come in many forms and all these things referencing within the marketing the original film. So they were very much using Cloverfield. And J.J. Abrams, the biggest thing, I don't even care that he said that, hey, there's no monster, this is a blood relative, don't expect that. That wasn't as misleading as him saying that this film had captured the spirit and the tone of the original movie. The original movie was an action, I wouldn't even call it a mystery. I mean, you were wondering what was happening or why this thing was there, but it was a very action-oriented love story.
Well, like we said in our actual podcast, like it's an event film. It really is. It's like you're in this event with these characters and you're moving with them. You're going. The monster's there. Yeah, you have questions about the mystery of, you know, why is the creature here? What the heck the parasites are. But like, that's not the focus of the film. You're not focusing on the mystery because you're so caught up in everything that you have no time to think. Just like the characters in the film have no time to think either. They're just caught up in what's going on.
Yeah, and 10 Cloverfield Lane is a mystery suspense thriller.
Yeah.
Flat out. With 10 minutes of action at the end. I mean,
literally 10 minutes of action at the end.
So I'm sorry. So I was almost about to buy it. I was almost, rallying behind J.J. Abrams, who I love as a filmmaker. I truly do love J.J. Abrams, the filmmaker, before Star Wars, his reimagining of Star Trek, Mission Impossible 3. I'm a big fan of J.J. Abrams. And Dan Trachtenberg is going to do amazing things. I'm a huge fan of him now. But we were lied to to sell our movie ticket. We were. It was a hostage situation as much as Michelle in the film was. You put that word Cloverfield on it, and I have to buy a ticket. I have to. I'm a huge fan of the original. Even after finding out that there's no monster or anything, there's that thing of loyalty with one of your favorite films getting a sequel.
Yeah.
And so you got me in that seat, and you literally tricked me into it.
Yep. And then, and it would have been one thing if it had paid off. Even if it wasn't the monster, like if it had kept that same tone.
I love aliens. Right, like it's like a sweet alien movie.
Yeah,
I love aliens.
Like if they were weaved into the plot, if it had played out fine at the end, like it would have been like, oh, well, all right, it's not a giant monster movie, but hey, it was still a very well done sci-fi story. But no, this isn't a sci-fi story. That's what I was trying to explain to my wife earlier, is that this movie was not a sci-fi story. It's a thriller with, it happens to have some sort of sci-fi element at the very, very end that comes out of bloody nowhere, and it doesn't make any sense that it's there. But, we'll get to that in a second when we get a little bit more in depth. So went over the marketing. What did you want to hit next?
Script.
Okay.
Go to script. Why is it in this shape? And if this is your first time listening or you haven't been following the production, this movie started out as, what was it called, Cellar Door?
No, it's just Cellar.
Cellar. It was a script called Cellar. It was a spec script written just to try to sell it. It was an original story. Had these three main characters. They were in a bunker. One of them was crazy. It was very similar to many parts of this movie now. But it was
the first two thirds, at least.
Yeah, it was a completely original film, and it was not, as far as I know, a sci-fi film at all.
Yeah.
And So that's how it started. And so then it was bought by J.J. Abrams and Bad Robot. And they did some pretty major rewrites. Not as many as we'd think, but they did do a bunch where, like, I think there was some crazy love triangle in the original script or something like that, or Emmett was a rapist. I don't know. But point is, there were some script changes, and they decided to turn it into a sci-fi film, and it was titled Valencia. At least that was the, you know, on-set name. So that, right. that happens a lot. There's always different names for productions while they're shooting to keep them secret. But at some point along the way, somebody said, hey, wouldn't it be great if this were a Cloverfield film?
Yeah.
We the whole obsession in Hollywood right now and for the last 5 years has been franchises. You will get three times as many butts in the seat as you will with a franchise without one. And, you know, maybe this wasn't J.J. Abrams. Maybe the studio said, hey, if you're going to make this small little bunker indie movie, we need it to be a property. We need it to have some, you know, guarantees behind it so that we can throw this money at it. Maybe that happened along the ways, and he's not really to blame. But I think a good argument could be said for not making this film rather than tarnishing the name of the franchise that we're all huge fans of.
Yeah. I mean, it just like, when you look at the script, or the script that we ended up with in the movie, like, it literally does feel like there are two types of people writing the script, like we were talking about earlier. Like, it feels like there was one person who wrote The Cellar, and, you know, it had a very definitive beginning, middle, and end. And if you look at the first parts of this movie, while they are inside the cellar, it literally has a beginning, middle, and end. The movie could have literally ended the instant that she stepped outside and she realized the air was breathable. Like, that would have been the ending to the film. It would have ended 10 minutes earlier than it did. Nothing would have changed at all. Like, zero things would be different about this movie, except it wouldn't have had this weird tacked-on alien thing that didn't ever get referenced except for a couple of lines from John Goodman at one point, and then Emmett. Yeah. He says something about it at some point.
And you might think we're over-exaggerating with this. I mean, if you haven't seen the film and you just don't care about spoilers, I kid you not. I mean, it's a couple pop culture references to aliens. And
yeah.
Jokes like talking about little green men. Like, crazy 5-second, you know,
out of nowhere. Sentences. Yeah. yeah
beginning of the film. And then Emmett saying, like, hey, me and Howard talked about what might be outside. He doesn't think it's zombies. We should hear his space worm idea. Like, it's so random and so minuscule. Yeah. It does not set up a third act reveal.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't stick with you. Like, I, you know, I was trying to pay attention as close as I was when I was watching it. And, you know, if you listen to our last podcast, we actually got a little spoiled on that part of things. So I was trying to wait and see how they were going to play this off. And it just didn't, like, it just felt like it was tacked on. Like, it was literally like the first, once again, they didn't go back and rewrite that first Cellar script, other than adding a couple little lines in there, and then
changing
they just
some characters around, probably.
Right, but yeah, maybe changing a few things, but not much, you know. And, you know, to get away from the ending for a second, one of the things that I really thought, and you thought a little bit different of this, it seems like, but, like, I knew from the get-go, like, exactly how it was going to play out with the three characters. I knew from the first trailer that John Goodman was going to end up being the villain. I was hoping, and you actually might recall this, I talked to you about this, I was hoping that they were going to pull a switcheroo on us. We were all going to think John Goodman was the villain, and then suddenly it was going to actually be revealed that Emmett is the one that's the serial killer. You know, like, it just, John Goodman's character was really well done, but I saw his switcheroo coming at the end. I didn't, like, even when they tried to play it off as, like, no, he's not crazy, like, bad stuff actually is happening outside. Like, no, he's still insane. Like, the way he's talking, the way this story is going to play out is he's going to be the bad guy.
I think in the middle, when they play up John Goodman as sympathetic and maybe possibly not the villain, I think that did work for me.
Okay.
It's not like it really tricked me into thinking he wasn't a bad guy, but I wanted to get on board with John Goodman being not
you
a bad
wanted
guy.
Him to be the bad,
yeah,
or the
good
guy.
I think they were just too blunt with the turns. Like, once you find out again that yeah, he is a bad guy. It's very straightforward and immediate. Like, he doesn't give you any time to process things or be revealed. It's just like, oh, okay, yeah, he's totally bad. We should totally get out of here, bro.
Yeah, like, let's get out of here. And then they immediately switch over from the middle part of the movie where they're all having fun together to make him creepy again, like, right away. Like, yeah. They do that, what were they playing? They were playing, I don't remember what game they were playing, with the cards, and she was trying to get him to say woman, and instead all he could say was girl, little princess.
Yeah.
Like, that was immediately just creepy. Like, there wasn't any question at that. They didn't play that off. It's like John Goodman in the center of the movie was a completely different character than at the beginning and the end. And it's just very strange that they did it like that. And like I said, I didn't get tricked by it at all. I knew what was coming from even the trailers, but I was hoping that there was going to be something different since this movie is such a mystery box. Like, that's the only reason why I was hoping for more is, like, they're misleading us with everything. Like, John Goodman's not going to be the villain, and then he turns out to be the villain. Like, it just kind of played into the plot that I had in my head of the movie, and it kind of disappointed me in that sense. But I don't know if that's how it was in The Cellar. I don't know, you know.
But yeah, I didn't read that script just in case it was super close to this. I didn't want to be completely spoiled.
Yeah, but, neither did I.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it was, on a scripting level, one more draft, another polish, could have done wonders for this film. But I do think, I think on its own, it is an enjoyable film. I think the humor was a lot better than I was expecting. I liked a lot of the humor. That really worked for me. I like the character. I liked Elmet. I thought it was messed up when he died.
Yeah.
And how sudden it was. And I like a lot of parts of this movie, and I might need to see it again sooner than I'm even thinking, because I'm coming away from it. I do like it. I'm just so disappointed and feel so... It's exaggerating. It's a little over the top, but I feel betrayed. I feel betrayed by filmmakers I like and how they just, like, spit in my face and spit in the face of this franchise I love. And you know.
I really honestly think, for me, it's the ending. For me, the ending is what ruins this movie for me. It not the fact of what it is, it's the way that it's pulled off. Like, if I was watching this movie again, if I cut it off exactly where I said, whenever she hears the birds and she takes off her mask, I would probably, like, oh, that was a decent movie. You know, I'd watch that again. But it's just the transition from that to suddenly she's standing on the car and she sees this alien spaceship flying that just doesn't work for me. It doesn't click. Nothing leading up to this point shows you that it should be aliens.
You know what it really reminds me of? What really, really reminds me of now I'm thinking about? Colin Trevorrow's first movie. Safety Not Guaranteed?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you haven't seen that, spoilers for Safety Not Guaranteed. It is this sweet drama about a guy who's been through some really messed up stuff, and he's kind of like dealing with it by thinking he can travel through time. And it's obviously a metaphor for wishing we could go back and fix things.
Yeah.
And it's a very sweet drama and really well acted, awesome movie, up until the last 5 minutes when he reveals his time machine and travels back in time.
Yep.
It's such a, just like a big F you to the audience. And it's supposed to be clever. It's supposed to be like, haha, guys, he was right the whole time. Like, I get it, it's different, but it's different in the face of good storytelling.
Yeah, and here's the thing that really bothers me, and it goes into the whole feeling betrayed thing, is thinking about this movie and looking at the ending with the aliens, this movie would not have had to been changed at all if she had walked outside and still thought, oh, it's safe to breathe, it's all safe out here, and then Clover or the parasites had shown up. Nothing would have had to been changed. Because that part is so separate, like, nothing would have been different.
Yeah, you 100% could have done Clover.
And it would have been such a better reveal and made it feel like that Cloverfield movie all of a sudden. You're just like, oh, it was a monster attack. Oh. And even when Emmett, and I thought about this just now, Emmett, whenever he's talking about when he saw the attack happen, remember he said there was just an orange flash of light like an explosion. Mm-hmm. Guess what happened at the beginning of Cloverfield whenever Clover first showed up? He blew up that tanker and it was a huge explosion. That would have been such a cool just like callback to like, oh, he, like, the Cloverfield monster was in the city that he was on his way to, and it, like, blew something up, just like in the first movie.
There could have been a number of things like that they did different, but...
Yeah, but it's just, like, there's no... The whole reason why J.J. Abrams wanted to do Aliens is because he wanted to do a new take on a different genre. He said this in interviews recently since the movie got released, or close to it. And it's like, okay, that's fine, but you really didn't do that in the entirety of the movie. So why not just make it this alternate timeline where, oh, the Cloverfield monster never attacked New York, but now it's attacking this, you know, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Like, it just, it's very strange. But, you know, that's just me, like, trying to have those connections that it did not have.
I'm not even going to try to touch how you could connect the story to Cloverfield. I'm sure you could try it different ways, but it would still probably feel as tacked on as this ending did. But
it would, yeah.
I would like to say, this movie was already done by a better group of filmmakers, and it's called Take Shelter.
Yeah.
Have you seen Take Shelter?
I haven't, but you told me about it.
Okay, well, I'm going to spoil it right now. Are you okay with that?
Oh, sure,
You've had your time to see it. so, spoilers for Take Shelter. Take Shelter is a modern-day's Noah's Ark, where Jeff Nichols, the director, he takes Michael Shannon as this just husband and father, and he starts giving him these visions of a storm coming. And so... Michael Shannon's character becomes obsessed with building a storm shelter in their backyard. And he goes all out. He digs it up. He puts all their money into it, even though his daughter needs surgery. And it gets really dramatic because his family has a, they have mental conditions run through their family. And so he even visits his mom in a mental hospital. And so he doesn't know if he's going crazy, if this is what it looks like, or if he is actually having these visions. But it's tearing his family apart. It's tearing the town apart. Everybody thinks he's crazy. And the huge long scene at the end is them. He tells his family, it's coming. This storm is coming. And it actually starts raining. And this huge storm comes in. And he gets his family into this shelter. And they start fighting about it. Because they've been down there all night. And they think it's okay to come out. They think it was just a normal storm. Because they can't hear it anymore. And he's desperately trying to tell his wife, it's out there. We can't go out. We have to stay in here. It's the only place to save. And his wife convinces him that, like, hey, we will get you help. I'm here for you. I love you. I don't know what this is, but you have to trust me now. And they open the door. They go outside. It's perfectly nice out. It's, like, beautiful weather. It's amazing. It's, and, like, you're crying. Like, it's a huge emotional moment that he's, like, he's gotten through this. He made the choice. And they decide, they've been talking the whole movie about taking a vacation and going to the beach. Yeah. And so the last scene of the movie, right after this huge emotional scene, is him playing with his daughter on the beach, and they've got like a little house on the beach that they're like condoing in or whatever, and they're all sitting there and just being this wonderful, great family. You can tell they've gotten through a lot, and the whole movie, when he's had these visions, it started raining, and the rain's been like oil, and a drop lands on his hand while he's on the beach,
man.
And it's oil, and he turns around, and there is this huge storm coming from over the ocean with tornadoes, and it's yellow, and it's horrible, and they have nowhere to go.
He was right,
and the movie just ends. That's incredible. Awesome.
That sounds amazing.
It's an amazing film, and it's what this should have been.
Yeah, and okay, so one last thing on the script, because we need to talk about the aliens, because there's a lot of stuff that I have opinions on about them. Do you remember if Megan is still alive in the ARG, as far as we know?
Oh, I was going to bring this up too. The ARG does not say what happened to Megan, and neither does the movie.
At all. And the thing that bothers the most about it is like, okay, so John Goodman apparently kidnapped a girl named Bethany?
Brittany,
mm-hmm. There it is. And it's like, okay, so wait, but the ARG insinuates that Megan is still alive up until the attack. So was he just already psycho and already kidnapping people and throwing them into the barrel?
I think he was crazy.
Yeah, it's just they didn't talk about that. That part of the movie, they didn't talk about what was actually going on with Megan. Like, in fact, as far as the movie is concerned, it really insinuates that Megan never existed, which is like we were saying in the spoiler free section, like completely goes against the ARG. Like the ARG is all about him trying to talk to his daughter and get her to the shelter before things go wrong. And then this movie goes out of its way to make him just seem so insane that he's kidnapping people and calling them his daughter. Like it almost makes it seem like she doesn't exist in the film. And that's a scripting problem.
It's kind of a big coincidence that, like, hey, this guy built this amazing shelter just in case aliens attack. And, oh, he happens to be right. But, oh, by the way, he's also a sociopathic murderer. Like, yeah. It's a few too many things, right?
Yeah, it just kind of stacks up onto itself. And then you're just like, I don't know if I believe that anymore. Like, it's just a little too much. But yeah, it just that subplot with Brittany being kidnapped and it just kind of out of nowhere is like, oh, okay, like that's kind of strange. I get it. You needed the action to make her realize that, you know, Howard's not telling the truth, but it just felt kind of out of place, especially with knowing what was going on in the ARG with Megan and all that stuff. But so you ready to hit these aliens pretty hard? Because I got a lot to say about the aliens.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so we'll jump into the aliens. We've already mentioned that they weren't set up. They weren't. They were hinted at barely, but they felt very much like I said earlier, like a television script ending. And to make it more so, I don't know how you could have really tied them into this universe, but I think you'd agree with me that they feel like completely random in design, yeah. Too.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, they have nothing. Like I said, you know, like you could have substituted the Cloverfield monster and the parasites at the end, and it would have not changed the script. Well, honestly, when I was getting ready to see the aliens, you know, like that you see the ship, and I was like, oh cool, we're about to see the little alien. Like I was like, oh, maybe it's gonna like have some design similarities to something. Like maybe it's gonna look a little bit like a weird like Clover Super 8 hybrid thing, like, or look like a giant parasite or something, you know, just something that I could grasp onto. But instead what we got is this weird like dog armored like thing that has the mouth from the slugs from the bottom of the pit in King Kong. Like it just there wasn't anything to grasp onto with it.
I can hear the arguments right now against us. You guys are obsessed with Cloverfield. Why are you just comparing it to Cloverfield? Blah, blah, blah. Why is it like that? Because it's called Cloverfield.
Yeah, like, seriously.
But that aside, it honestly just felt like somebody said, hey, make some sweet aliens. Like, that was the only design factor.
Yeah.
They're kind of War of the Worlds-esque in some ways, but it did seem like the designer just went wild.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, the fact is that the alien and the spaceship are only in the film for such a short period of time that I would have liked it to be something that we could grasp onto so that we didn't sit there trying to like focus on it and trying to figure out, wait, what? Now there's aliens. What are these things? Like, what do they do? Like, how do they act? You know, like we were trying to grasp for straws because we couldn't get any visual representation of what we were even supposed to be reacting to a certain extent. Or at least that was for me. Like especially the dog alien. The spaceship had some unique ideas to it for me, but it wasn't. I've seen that spaceship look in so many things before. Not the creature living inside of it or whatever, but the actual design of the spaceship I've seen in games. I've seen in movies for years now. It wasn't anything that stood out to me.
You know, I think that if you talk about the overall kind of, like, I guess, character development that they try to play up with Michelle in relation to the aliens, it was kind of like, okay, this is a person who runs away from their problems. And the ending was all about she's not running away anymore.
Yeah, she's standing up for herself.
Yeah, that was the big thing. But wouldn't it have been so much better if she, you know, got in some argument with her boyfriend, but that wasn't who her character was, this person who runs away from their problems. She got in a car wreck, went through the whole John Goodman thing, was trapped underground, and this alien part, maybe extend it just a little bit and have it be the things she learned while facing John Goodman or really revealing who he is to her if yeah. that came into play with how she beat the aliens or how she fought them.
Oh, you mean instead of throwing a Molotov and somehow destroying an entire alien spacecraft?
That was so, I mean, for a movie that for a movie that was really trying to be original and really different, that was such a Sylvester Stallone Expendables way to end the movie.
And I don't feel like the movie earned that. Like, I don't feel like, you know, yeah, you're right. She does have a character arc, you know, throughout the bunker stuff, at least. But, you know, once she gets out there, like, you know, the only reaction that she had to it being aliens, which once again is unwarranted because they only talk about aliens once in the rest of the movie, like, where she's just like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, and she's standing on top of the car. That's it. That's her only reaction other than, like, okay, I gotta get in the car and leave, and now I'm in the car, but now I gotta kill this spaceship that's about to eat me or whatever.
And I know what they were going for there at the end. They really wanted her to get up there and see the aliens, and you as the audience would just feel like, she's been through so much. Ah, now we gotta deal with this. Like, yeah. It was such a random tone shift.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what's funny, though, is, like, at the end, you do get that, like, that Cloverfield event thing, like, when she is up there. You do. You really do. Like, mm-hmm. It feels like, oh, no, now there's aliens. Now she's caught up in this. How is this character going to react to this situation? And you're just going to go with her. But the problem is, you know, once again, it's tacked on to the end, so it doesn't, you end up with more questions than answers, and not in a good way, like with Cloverfield. You end up with all these questions of just like, wait, what? Why? What's going on? And then she's driving at the end, and she gets the radio call, and she's like, I'm going to go kick some alien butt. And she turns left to go to Houston, and you see the spaceship. And it's just like, that wasn't earned. Like, I don't feel like she's enough of a Ripley in Aliens. Like, she's more of a Ripley in Alien, where she went through some stuff, she did kill the alien, but, like, she's, like, not, like, the ultimate badass.
You know what would have really been a spiritual successor to Cloverfield? Is if you started the movie with this person being held by an actual, like, flat-out psycho killer, and she was held against her will, and the beginning of the movie was her escaping. Like, literally, the first 20 minutes of the movie was her getting away from this guy, and then aliens attack, and she uses this, like, darkness inside her of what she's been through. Like, she escapes after so many years being held by this guy, and she, like, the only place to run is a city that's being attacked by aliens, and the whole movie is like her being one more person dealing with the trauma of finally being free, and now we've got aliens coming to enslave us, you know. It's like, at least that would have parallels to the original Cloverfield.
And if you did something like that, you could have done you know, like, she doesn't know who to trust type of thing, because she's been captive for so long. Like, she meets people along the way, and some of them are good, some of them are bad, but she doesn't know who to trust because all this crazy stuff has happened to her, and she's dealing with aliens, like, out of the gate. Like, it's just crazy stuff going on. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's what they're doing, you know, because he said that if this movie makes enough, they want to do a direct sequel to this movie, which seems a little strange, and I don't know if I actually want that. But
again, that would be so random. I would not want that, just for the sole purpose of, if I really like this proposed sequel to this movie, I have to sit down and watch 10 Cloverfield Lane to lead into it.
Yeah.
Which would be completely different than whatever the sequel would be. It wouldn't be a good double feature at all.
No, yeah. And, by the way, I was super scared of, you know, we were joking about the whole, monsters come in many forms, like, it's gonna just be John Goodman or whatever. I was super afraid that they were gonna do something with that whenever he got burned and he was, like, coming after her. I was like, oh, don't like make him mutate or some shit, don't make him not be human. I was afraid for a long period in that part of the movie.
I think we can wrap this up. I think we've got our thoughts out there. Again, I know it sounds like we're being really harsh on this movie. I think you should see it. I think it is a good time, and if you're going in with your girlfriend and she has no idea what's going on, maybe she'll get something out of it. But I mean, if you really enjoyed the first movie, I think this is gonna be a really big disappointment. I think it's gonna be a much talked about movie, so you should get out there and see it. But man, I mean, what a missed opportunity in general.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it just, you know, we're a giant monster podcast, so I feel like we are a little biased. You know, all you have to do is listen to our first episode to hear, you know, our arguments of what is a giant monster movie, what isn't. Obviously, this is not at all. We're only talking about it because we promised we would talk about it pretty much. I feel like, yeah, it will be entertaining for people that have no expectations. But a lot of people, I fear for this movie to a certain extent, because a lot of people are going to go into this movie remembering the first one, and they're going to just walk out extremely disappointed just because, well, that was nothing like the first one. That had nothing to do with it. I just feel like that was their biggest missed opportunity.
I think this will do really well with a younger audience who
doesn't
really care or remember Cloverfield. And
yeah, the people that just saw it on the Super Bowl and were like, oh, that looks cool.
Yeah, and then they go in there and be like, whoa, it's aliens, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that if you like this movie, you're dumb. I'm not saying that at all. I generally like this movie. I'm just saying it's not a super smart movie. It's not a, it didn't try to be really clever. People are comparing this to a Twilight Zone episode. I think that is...
It's a fair description.
No, it's a front to a Twilight Zone episode, because Twilight Zone was so amazing because it had crazy twists at the end that were so clever. They were like turn of phrases in how they were done. They were Shakespearean.
That's true.
They were so smart in how they it was almost like a joke at the end of each episode, like with the irony that would happen or the transgressions that would come out of nowhere. But they always made sense, and they were always really smart and really clever. This one was a twist for twist's sake, and trying to be a weird sci-fi mystery movie that it didn't earn and didn't have the capability of being.
Yeah. Well, those are pretty much our thoughts on 10 Cloverfield Lane. Please send us emails. Let us know what you thought of the movie. If you agree with us, disagree with us. We would love to hear you guys' opinions. Also, do you have any hints towards the fourth episode, my friend?
No, we haven't really talked about that at all. I will say that we're going to go old school. We're going to go Eastern with where it's from, if you take that meaning. And we're definitely going to be throwing around the word kaiju while talking about it. So keep a lookout for the next episode where we go old school kaiju with our discussion or movie or media we're talking about. But we'll let you know if you follow our Twitter or if you're on our Facebook. We'll be throwing out more hints as to what the next episode might turn out to be. So keep a follow on that. Check out our website at TokyoLivesPodcast.com. Give us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate those. We're going to start reading them out on the air. So anything you do for that'd be amazing. We definitely need the reviews just so we can get the word out there on the podcast and have more people tune in. So we hope you enjoyed this special report. We're definitely going to do more as more giant monster movie come out, or just movies that we think are giant monster movies, apparently.
Obviously the biggest next one will be Resurgence, whenever that comes stateside.
Godzilla Resurgence,
Godzilla Resurgence, sorry for those just tuning in. There is a new Japanese Godzilla film, which is releasing this summer in Japan, but we do not know when or if it will be releasing in America. But if it does release in America and we can track it down, be expecting another special report pretty quickly after it releases. Mm-hmm. So, thanks for tuning in, guys, and hope you listen in next episode.
Yeah, thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good one.